Okay, here we go. We're going live in 3, 2, 1.
Grab your mason jars, strap on that apron. It's time for Canning with the Diva, making her mark across the globe, teaching you how to safely preserve delicious recipes. Please welcome your host, Diane Devereaux,
the Canning Diva.
Hey everyone, it's Diane Devereaux, the Canning Diva. Thank you so much for tuning in to my podcast, Canning with the Diva. Super happy to be back. I took a week off. Had an opportunity with spring break on the horizon with my daughter. We went down to Tennessee and had a wonderful time together. Just good fellowship, mother and daughter fellowship, and opportunity to see my friend Carrie. We had the pleasure of dropping into Nashville. We toured Franklin and Leaper's Fork, and we really had a lot of fun, just girl time, right? Enjoying the countryside. We managed to forego a horrendous slew of tornadoes, and my prayers and blessings and just thoughts out to all of you who were affected. I believe it was Kentucky, and if I remember correctly, some of Ohio, and then later Pennsylvania had an earthquake. It's been a whirlwind recently, so I just pray that everyone's safe, and then our friends down in Louisiana who are tuning in, Slidell, I know you guys got hit just recently, and I just want you to know that my thoughts and prayers are with all of you. So it's been a whirlwind of the last 9-10 days, and I'm happy to say that we're safe and I'm back in the studio. Today, I want to talk about my upcoming book launch for Meals in a Jar. The official title is The Canning Diva Presents Meals in a Jar. And I know many of you have been reaching out to me excited about the book. Many of you have pre-ordered it on either Amazon or Barnes & Noble. I know it's also over at Christian Books and BAM. And I just wanted to make sure that I took some time out for all of you who love to tune in and learn about different preservation techniques, food preservation techniques. I want to tell you about my book, Meals in a Jar. I want to share with you what inspired me. And a lot of that comes down to you guys. And then I want to go through the chapters, and I'm going to give you a sneak peek to a couple delicious recipes. So if you are taking notes or you're in the kitchen while you're tuning in, you can get a jump start on creating two of my meals in a jar. So let's get started. I'm going to kind of go through a bit of what Meals in a Jar is all about. And honestly, it came from you all. You spoke, I listened. And over the course of the last 4 years, I have heard, especially, well, since COVID, right? And I launched my book, Beginner's Guide to Canning in 2020, and it had very well reception. For those of you that love my book, The Complete Guide to Pressure Canning, I know you're going to love Meals in a Jar, because I believe between those two books, that is what spurred so much interest and excitement in more meals in a jar. And so those of you that reached out and were inquiring and picking my brain, sharing with me your recipes, asking if, hey, how do I make this work? How do I get this into a jar safely? I must say that that's where the book was born. And so I worked on this book for a total of 3 years. And finally, August 6th of 2024, this summer, we're going to see it released. Super excited. But I know many of you have been, you know, safely preparing, working on food security, building up your stockpile in your pantry. And as you were doing it, you were noticing that, you know, pickles and jams and salsas are great. Even having meals, you know, like components of meals, like the spaghetti sauce or the meat in a jar or beans already, you know, ready to go. That has helped make meal creation easier. But there's something to be said about an entire meal in a jar or a quart jar. You can even do it in a pint, but that, what was this term we were using a while back? It was a quart size meal. You know, there's sustenance to that. And having something shelf stable, ready made, all you have to do is heat it and eat it. It It is huge when it comes to those of us who want to be more secure in our food supply. We want to know where our food comes from, or we're just looking to preserve what we either grow and raise or buy locally. So that way, if God forbid we do see shelves bare again, we're not panicking. So Meals in a Jar is a very practical and safe guide to preserving ready-made shelf-stable meals for long-term storage. And my goal when I wrote this was to expand your palate while filling your pantry. And we're focusing again solely on pressure canning recipes. But this time what I did is I gathered up cuisines from around the world, and I wanted to help you dive deeper into, you know, creative ways to make mealtime fun and easy and pleasing to not only yourself, but to your family. So what I did, I'm going to scroll through my chapters here. I'm looking at my PDF. I don't have my printed copy just yet. It's coming. Super excited for our press copies to make their way to me. Oh my goodness, it'll be like holding a newborn baby, you know, in your hands. But the table of contents, I'm going to run through them. Yes, I was very, very blessed, my friend, and I call her my kindred spirit because she and I are so alike when it comes to, you know, living off the land and not off the man, you know, making sure that we're tending to our own soil, growing foods, heirloom foods that we can reseed, you know, collect the seeds and grow down the road. We can share those seeds, you know, having our own chickens, hunting, fishing, you know, all the things that us country girls, you know, take pride in. However, what I love about Carrie is, you know, she's down to earth. She needed some fine tuning and some skill gathering. That's why she reached out to me. And, you know, I taught her and her sister-in-law and her girlfriends, and we had a blast. Pressure canning is not scary. It can be scary, but once you're shown, I mean, the sky's the limit. And for those of you who follow Carrie Underwood on her social media, you'll see, especially on Instagram, she is constantly posting, you know, her hard work and all of the wonderful jars she, you know, preserves for her family, her garden, her chickens. You know, she shares her life with us. So I was very blessed that she took that into, you know, the printed word and wrote my book forward. The first chapter of the book is The Principles of Pressure Canning. So for those of you who are very new to home canning, or you've water bathed before, but you've never pressure canned, this book is going to give you everything you need to know. So you don't have to have 10 different books on hand. You truly can use this as your complete guide to getting you up and going and operating your pressure canner. I also speak about the digital pressure canners out there. I talk about, because we've come a long way since my first pressure canning book. And it's so exciting to see the progress and the innovation and how we can jump into, you know, the 21st century very well grounded, safe, and actually do some of the cool things that are in this book. Now, the second chapter obviously is going to be getting started. So I give you all the foundational items, the tools, the essentials, various tips and techniques. Again, I want my book to be, yes, it's a cookbook and I want you to have recipes, but I want it to be that guide that teaches you and is your friend in the kitchen so you're not alone. Now, chapter 3 is about ingredient substitutions. This to me is huge. I find this to be the most fun. It's groundbreaking. It's where I spent a lot of my time talking, researching, testing. My goal with chapter 3 was to teach all of you how to customize safely your home canning recipes. I also demystify some of that misinformation and misnomers out there, especially because the internet, it's a blessing and a curse, right? I, you know, take the butter myth and demolish it so you understand how butter in the culinary world can be safely utilized when we home can low acid recipes. I talk about sugar and salt, the various substitutes you can use for both. I talk about a variety of ingredient substitutions. Even I go in as far as to talk about different spices and herbal substitutions, because let's face it, some people just don't like certain things, and that's okay. I have a very good friend of mine, Jenny. She and I did a lot of canning together back in the day when our kids were much younger. She can't eat cilantro. To her, it tastes like soap. And I know some of you are nodding your head because you either suffer that same palate differential, or you know somebody who does, right? So I get it. And if you still want to have a recipe be flavorful and delicious, you want to have some substitutions to what was intended, right? So even if you can't eat cilantro, I teach you ways in which to incorporate other seasonings into the dish so that you're still getting a very robust meal in a jar. And then the other thing I love about ingredient substitutions, and this is something Carrie turned me on to because she shared with me she's a vegetarian, and there's not a lot of vegetarian canning recipes out there. And there's a lot of vegans who've reached out to me saying, okay, I love your recipe, but I don't use this, that, and the other, or I use, you know, coconut aminos, or, you know, there's a variety of different dietary needs out there. And so I worked very diligently with my friends over here at the lab, and I enjoyed testing and working with plant-based meat substitutes. So you're going to see in this upcoming book, Meals in a Jar, the use of jackfruit. You're going to see tofu. You'll see soy-based plant meats, and a lot of fun other ingredient substitutions to make you feel comfortable that you can home can, even if you don't eat certain things or you happen to omit a lot of what is considered normal, right? There's a lot of normal meat-based recipes out there, but if you don't eat meat, that's, you know, that now becomes a real pain in the tuchus, and I alleviate that pain with chapter 3. So far with Meals in a Jar, you have the principles of pressure canning. You have a whole chapter dedicating to helping you get started. Chapter 3 is ingredient substitutions. And then chapter 4, we go right into raw stacking. Now, I had a lot of fun for many years using the raw stacking method. But what I wanted to do for all of you is create specific recipes that I have tested and retested to make sure my ratios are sound. I wanted you to have a really fun, quick, easy way to just crank it out. And for those of you who have canned before and you've used the raw stacking methods, you're nodding your heads because you know exactly what I'm talking about. It helps you create almost like an assembly line function in your kitchen. It makes canning low acid recipes so much quicker. It removes that step of pre-cooking everything. Now, some recipes you'll learn in that chapter, it's worth putting the time into pre-cooking. Okay, so not everything can be raw stacked, but I gave you a lot of really fun, cool recipes that are absolutely delicious that you can raw stack. So when time is of the essence and you need to put food up and you want something quick and healthy, that's chapter 4. Okay, so the other chapters I had fun. It gets into the yumminess here. Mediterranean cuisine. We have Asian cuisine, Mexican, American and European, Middle Eastern. And then I also made sure I devoted an entire chapter to vegetarian. I wanted you to have a very well-rounded, international type of meals to create for you and your family. So even if you don't like Asian food, it's okay because you have all these other chapters that you can utilize to help you round out that pantry. I mean, come on, we can only eat so much beef stew and chili before we're just, ugh, you know, what happens when we don't step outside our comfort zone or we don't create something different? We wind up eating out at the restaurant and that's costing us money. We wind up doing fast food or DoorDash and we bring stuff into the home and, you know, we start kind of removing ourselves from the core values of why we do what we do with home canning and food preservation. So my goal was to help curve that right back into the kitchen, give you so many wonderful things that you can incorporate into your everyday lives. There's breakfast, lunch, dinners. You have it all at your fingertips in Meals in a Jar. Okay, so with that, I want to get into the recipe section. I'm going to scroll down. The book is beautiful. I cannot wait for you to see it. Oh my goodness. I'm so thankful and so blessed to Harvest House Publishers. They've been so good to me. They really saw the vision, you know, the concept that I approached to them. And I already had, thankfully, almost most of the book done for a good, lack of a better word, I should say. And when my agent and I pitched this idea to multiple publishers, I just fell in love with the team at Harvest House, the offer I couldn't refuse, and they truly support me. And I think you're going to see that in the creativity. You're going to see that in the book itself. I mean, it's absolutely beautiful. We don't have an image for every recipe. As much as we would love to do that, we wanted more, not to be funny here or cheeky, we wanted more meat, more substance. We wanted to make sure we left a lot of room for recipes. Now, I showed many of the recipes and images, but not all, and that's okay. I think I've given you a really well-rounded view. And then, of course, you know, I'm going to be doing a lot of videos. So if you follow me on social media, definitely subscribe to, you know, anything that Facebook offers, even my private group, because this summer I've got a lot of really good fun things in store. I'm going to be doing a lot of videos. You're going to see some of the recipes that I've created. We're going to walk through a lot of recipes. We're going to walk through the pressure canner this summer. So definitely subscribe, follow, you name it, YouTube as well, because we're going to have some fun. So the one I'm excited most about is Zuppa Toscana. Now, this is a very popular soup. It's a traditional Italian soup often consumed in the colder winter months. It boasts a high nutritional value and is hearty in nature. Authentically, it's made with cream and Parmesan cheese, but we will create and preserve the soup with all of its goodness, and we're going to leave out the cream and cheese for when you're ready to open a jar lid to heat and serve. So I'll go through all of the instructions, and I'll even share with you how much cream and cheese to use once we're done talking about the canning recipe. So let's dive in here to the ingredients. I'm going to run through the list, and then we'll talk a bit about each ingredient if there happens to be additional steps required. Okay, so for the ingredients, you're going to start with 1 pound of bacon, and you're going to cut those into 1-inch pieces prior to browning them. You'll need 3 tablespoons of olive oil, 2 sweet onions diced, which should yield 4 cups, 1 head of garlic peeled and minced, 3 pounds of Italian ground sausage, 12 cups of chicken stock.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
At Canning University, we're unlocking the flavors of food preservation year-round. Dive into a world of safe and confident canning with our range of digital classes. From principles of pressure canning to the art of pickling, there's a course for every taste. Enjoy diverse learning mediums, including engaging videos, interactive PDFs, exclusive podcasts, and course certification to prove your skills. Join us on this delicious journey. Enroll now at canning.university.
Six cups of water, 12 medium potatoes peeled and cut into 1/2-inch cubes, which will yield 12 cups, 2 pounds of kale, and once they're destemmed and chopped, you're going to yield 12 cups. 1/2 tablespoon of red pepper flakes, and 1 teaspoon of cracked black pepper. Now, this recipe is going to yield 7 quarts or 14 pints. With regards to all of the ingredients, I get asked questions regarding bacon. You can do cured or uncured. It's not a problem. You can also use your favorite type of bacon. Personally, I like the thick cut, but regular is fine. The only thing I would suggest is staying away from any bacon that's already pre-flavored. So if it has a maple syrup flavor to it, don't use it. It's going to change the recipe's outcome. Smoked bacon is fine, but if it starts having like a hickory smoke to it, that's also going to change the flavor of the recipe. So I wouldn't go too crazy with anything that's smoked in a hickory flavor. However, if you don't mind it in the soup, go right ahead. Sometimes we got to use what we have in the freezer. I get it. So no worries. Okay, as far as onions go, I prefer you use sweet onions for the overall intended flavor of the recipe. However, if all you happen to have are yellow, white, or Spanish onions on hand, just go ahead and use them. Not a problem. And then chicken stock, you may use your own home canned or store-bought. I get asked this all the time. I don't like to use my home canned stock for other home canned recipes. Or broth, for that matter. It takes me a long time to create and preserve my own stocks and broths. So I use those when I'm cooking for fresh, and I will often use store-bought broth or stock when making other recipes. You're welcome to do the same. There's no wrong answer or wrong way. Either way is safe. It just depends on what you have available and what you want to use. Now, as far as the potatoes go, russets are what are commonly used in this recipe. Feel free to use whatever potato you have on. Definitely peel them for the sake of the soup. It's not a safety issue. It's just that is how Supa Toscana is made, and you don't see the potato peel in there. Also with the kale, one of my biggest tips are go ahead and get those leaves all cleaned and stack them on top of each other, roughly like six of them at a time. Hold on to the stem. And when you de-stem them, you're kind of like cutting a V down the main vein of that stem. And then what I like to do once the stem is removed and they're deveined, I kind of take them all six layered, roll them up, and then I rough chop my Santuco knife through them. So that way I have some nice sized pieces because they will shrink up quite a bit once they're exposed to heat and liquid. Okay, so let's dive into the recipe. I want you to start by placing the cut bacon into a skillet, and I want you to cook it for about 8 to 10 minutes, or basically until the bacon is crisp but not burnt. Once it's done, I want you to set it aside and allow it to cool. And then I want you to use your fingers and break it into crumbles. Place the oil into that stock pot you've set aside. We're going to now focus on the soup. I want you to now add oil, the onion, the garlic. Okay. And over medium high heat, I want you to cook that through, which will take about 10 minutes because you want the onions to be translucent. Next, I want you to add the Italian sausage. Go ahead and make sure you get that, worked into some bite-sized pieces. Cook it for about 15 minutes. You do want it fully cooked. Then I want you to add those bacon crumbles back to that stock pot. I want you to add the chicken stock, the water, potatoes, kale, red pepper flakes, and the black pepper. Mix it really well, and I want you to bring it to a boil. Then once it's at a boil, you reduce the heat and you're going to simmer the soup for only 5 minutes. Now, using a funnel and a slotted spoon, I want you to evenly distribute the meat and vegetables into each jar. You're going to yield just over half. I'd say closer to 3/4 is about for those 7 quarts or 14 pints. And that's fine. That's totally normal. We want it evenly distributed because then what you're going to do is you're going to ladle the soup broth over top of all of the solids and you're going to fill until there's a 1-inch head space. You remove any trapped air pockets, which there shouldn't be any, but it's a hearty soup, so make sure there's no trapped air pockets. Boy, say that 10 times fast. Trapped air pockets. And then add any additional broth as necessary to maintain that 1-inch headspace. As always, wipe those jar rims with a washcloth dipped in vinegar and place your lid and ring on each jar and hand tighten. Now, we are going to process this in a pressure canner at 10 PSI or according to your elevation and canner type. When I say canner type in meals in a jar, what I'm saying is there's now more than just stovetop canners out there on the market. If you're using a digital canner, sometimes you don't select the PSI. For instance, the Presto pressure canner, the precise 12-quart version, it doesn't ask you to select a PSI. It's going to automatically maintain that 240 degrees, so that way you're safe. So depending on which type of pressure canner you're using, use 10 PSI or according to your elevation. Then I want to make sure that you're timing this properly. All quarts will process for 75 minutes. Pints are going to process for 60 minutes. All right, now I have a gorgeous picture of this soup in my book. I have it in a jar, but I also have it in a bowl. And I shared how when you add the half and half or heavy whipping cream, it kind of gives it that beautiful white creamy hue. It's not like a creamed soup though. So it's not going to look like that when you add the half and half or the whipping cream. It's just going to no longer have a brothy look. So when you're ready to heat and serve, what I want you to do is I want you to bring your soup to a boil. And then I want you to slowly add 1 cup of half and half or heavy whipping cream, whichever you prefer. And that is if you're doing a quart jar. If you're only heating a pint jar of soup, you do half a cup of half and half or whipping cream, okay? And you're just going to heat that through. And then what I like to tell people is you want to serve the soup hot and you want to top it with a generous helping of shredded Parmesan cheese. It is just yummy delicious. For those of you who love having, you know, nice crusty bread or Parmesan bread with your soups, this is the perfect one to do that with. So yeah, really fun. You get an idea of just a simple, easy recipe, a great place to start if you're new to pressure canning, but now you're going to have this deliciousness in your pantry, you know, throughout the whole year. And it's definitely a crowd pleaser. So that's one of the recipes, and that's a simple one. And I did that on purpose because for those of you new to home canning or you're just getting started using a pressure canner, I don't ever want you to shy away from using it. And so sometimes the best place to start is some of those simpler recipes. Okay, I'm going to share another favorite of mine. Let me keep on scrolling. We're going to get into the Mexican chapter, Mexican cuisine. I am partial to Mexican food. Oh my goodness, I could eat Mexican food every day. I did pull from a variety of areas. So you're going to see some Aztec, you'll see Mexico, you're going to see some Spanish, you're going to see just a wide variety. And some of these recipes, which I'm really excited for you to create and preserve, you know, have quite a bit of history. You know, some things I've created on my own, others I had to recreate based on, you know, their popularity, that they're well known within the cuisine. And I had to, you know, make them, what would be the right word? Make them suitable for pressure canning. But this one is one of my favorite. It is called pork pozole. It's loaded with cubed pork, Mexican chorizo, hominy, and an array of spices. And so you're going to, if you like Mexican food and you want something a little more authentic and you want something that's, you know, breaks the norm than just maybe fajitas in a jar, this is definitely an awesome place to start. It is beautiful, so it makes a gorgeous presentation. It has lots of flavor because of the variety of spices that we're pulling from. And I think it's a fun way to just, you know, serve as is. You can serve it with cornbread and a side of black beans and rice. Or if you really wanted to put it in a tortilla or just eat it with tortilla chips, you're welcome to do that too. There's no wrong way But I can't tell you how many times we have pulled this recipe out of our pantry for dinner because it's delicious and it's easy, right? Okay, so we're going to do as we usually do. We're going to go through all of the ingredients together, and then we'll dive into the instructions. So for the pork pozole, we're going to have, let's see. Okay, this is going to yield 7 quarts or 14 pints. And we're going to start with 2 tablespoons of vegetable oil or any cooking oil, whatever you use in the kitchen. That's also discussed in chapter 3 for ingredient substitutions. You're going to need 1.5 pounds of boneless pork shoulder, and you're going to cube that while it's raw, and you'll yield 5 cups. Woof. Boy, I take 1 week vacation and I can't get my mouth to formulate words. My goodness. Okay, let me start again. 2 tablespoons of vegetable oil, 1.5 pounds of boneless pork shoulder cubed, which will yield 5 cups, 1 pound of ground Mexican chorizo, the more authentic the better, 8 cups of chicken stock, 2 16-ounce cans of hominy, and you'll drain those. That will yield 5 cups. Now, for those of you not familiar with what hominy is, I will share a little bit of information after we go through the canning recipe. It's derived from corn, so I don't want you to think you've got to race out and go get something you think you can't find. Trust me, you can find it. You'll probably find it at either the grocery store in the international foods aisle, or if you happen to have an authentic Mexican store or grocery chain near you, they will definitely have hominy. It's spelled H-O-M-I-N-Y. You'll want 2 16-ounce cans drained to yield 5 cups for this recipe. 9 Roma tomatoes. We're going to chop those up. You do not need to peel them. The goal is to yield 3 cups chopped. You'll need 1 large sweet onion diced, which will yield 3 cups. 2 cups of corn kernels. You may use fresh or frozen. If you're using canned corn, you can do that. You just need to drain it. But fresh, frozen, that'll typically be a little bit better for you. 3 jalapenos, you'll want to dice those up. You need to yield 1.5 cups. Now, if you don't like things super spicy, remove the seeds, okay? If you're concerned about the heat, if this is too hot for you, just drop it down to 1 jalapeno. That's fine. You'll need 1 head of garlic, peeled and minced, so you yield 1/4 cup. You'll need 1/4 cup of chili powder, 2 tablespoons of ground coriander, 1 tablespoon of ground cumin, 2 teaspoons of salt, which is optional. It's always optional when we're pressure canning low acid foods. And then last but not least, 1 teaspoon of ground black pepper. Okay, I'm going to run through the directions now. It's very, very simple. This recipe is going to process for the full 90 minutes for quarts, 75 minutes for pints. This will be, you know, typically your longest processing time, with the exception of seafood. Seafood's going to go for longer. So this is a really awesome second recipe to jump into if you're new to pressure canning. After you get the Super Toscana down pat, you feel comfortable, you know, going 60 minutes for pints or 75 minutes for quarts. Now you can up it to 90 and 75 minutes. All right. I want you to place the oil in a stock pot. I want you to heat that oil over medium high heat. Don't bring it to its smoke point. Just get it hot, please. I want you to add the pork and allow it to cook on one side for 3 minutes without disturbing it. There's no way you can cook it on all sides for 3 minutes, but just pick a side, cook it for 3 minutes undisturbed. We're going to get it nice and browned, okay? Just on the one side. Then I want you to remove the pork from the stock pot and set it aside. If you're doing a double batch of this, please brown your meat in batches. If you put too much meat in the stock pot all at once, it will start to create a lot of juice. It'll get very liquidy in there and it will not brown. So this area of the recipe, I want you to just take your time. You want a nice sear, okay? Now, let's see. We want to use the same stock pot. And now I want you to add the chorizo, cook it all the way through. It should take about 10 minutes. And then I want you to use your spatula just like we did with the ground meat for the Supa Toscana. And I want you to just chop up that chorizo. I want you to create some smaller pieces so that way it's well distributed throughout the recipe. Then go ahead and return the cubed pork to the stock pot. Mix it really well. Next, I want you to add the stock, the hominy, tomatoes, onion, corn kernels, jalapeno, garlic, chili powder, coriander, cumin, salt if you're using it, and the black pepper. Add all of that to the stock pot, mix it well, and bring it to a boil. Once it's at a boil, I want you to reduce the heat to a simmer, and we're just going to allow it to simmer for about 15 minutes, stirring it often. We don't want to scorch it, okay? But we just want to blend all these flavors. We've put quite a bit of seasoning and flavors into this dish. We want to give it that 15 minutes to permeate before we fill jars, okay? Now, next, using a funnel, I want you to ladle the pozole into the jars, and I want you to leave a 1-inch headspace. Now, while you're filling these jars, I don't want you to just plop it in there and call it good. Go ahead and use your headspace measuring tool and push some of that in there. You don't have to pack it tight, but you definitely want it to fill that jar, and then go ahead and fill it to a 1-inch headspace. Remove any trapped air pockets. And then add in any additional pozole if needed, because you want to maintain that 1-inch headspace. As always, wipe those jar rims with a washcloth dipped in vinegar, add your lids and rings, and hand tighten. And now we're going to process in a pressure canner at 10 psi or according to your elevation and canner type. We're going to process the quarts for 90 minutes and the pint jars for 75 minutes. Super, super easy, delicious, exciting, and it's absolutely beautiful. Now, for those of us who've canned before, we know that once something processes and cools, it takes on a very unique look when we're staring at it through the glass jar. Not to worry, when you go to reheat it, things will reconstitute. Any fats that solidified will liquefy again. Everything will look beautiful. It's why, you know, they love creating all these gorgeous images in the store to put on either glass jars or in, you know, aluminum cans, because it never really looks that way until you reheat it and go to make a meal with it. So don't panic when you start to see fat solidify in a jar or something looked a little dried out while it's in the jar. It's okay. When you go to reheat it, it will reconstitute and be beautiful. Those are the main chapters for meals in a jar. I definitely encourage you to pre-order. Like I said, you can pre-order on my website, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Who else has it? BAM, Christian Books. There's resources out there. I think I even saw Target's doing some pre-orders now. So yeah, you can pretty much get it anywhere. But let's take just a quick second here. I want to share with you what hominy is. If you've never ate it or heard of it, basically it is food produced from dried maize kernels. There's a lot of big words, a lot of scientific terms, but basically it is produced from corn. Okay. Maize is corn. And so what happens is the corn is treated with an alkali. All right. The process is called, I'm going to slaughter this word. I just know I am. So I'm already laughing at myself before I even got to it, but it's nixtamalization, N-I-X-T-A-M-A-I. L-I-Z-A-T-I-O-N. So it's a lye, and L-Y-E. And basically, it helps create this awesome, larger kernel-looking corn, basically. It's processed to give it a puffy texture. So it's going to look like the corn kernel exploded, right? And by doing this, it gives it a more meaty texture. And you'll often see recipes that call for hominy. You'll also have corn kernels in there too. It isn't a scary process. It isn't anything to be concerned about. If you do not want to add it, however, you may omit it. I don't want you to put anything in your food you're not comfortable with. All you have to do is just add additional corn kernels for what was called for with the hominy, okay? That's a very safe substitution. And especially depending on where you live, where you're tuning in from, or if you buy the book, you know, depending on where you live, you might not have access to it, and that's okay. You can simply use the corn kernels. It'll be just as delicious as the intended, and it'll still be just beautiful. Okay, so that is hominy in a nutshell. That is my book in a nutshell. I am super excited for you to get your hands on it, and I really look forward to hearing and seeing. I want you to see lots of pictures of all of your amazing creations from my cookbook, Meals in a Jar, because, you know, nothing brings me greater joy or gives me more inspiration than seeing you excited, seeing your pantries full, and watching the fear subside and you just, you know, a big old smile beaming ear to ear, showing us what you've been able to produce with your pressure canner. And it's gonna get me all choked up here. It really warms my heart and continues to motivate me to create more and to do more research and to push the boundaries towards innovation and progress so that we can have delicious food in jars and not rest on our laurels, right? Well, thank you so much for tuning in. I look forward to getting back to the studio on a regular basis and giving you many more exciting episodes of Canning with the Diva. I'm also going to begin incorporating what's called blanched. I have found that it's going to be easier to deal with the internet hate and misinformation by calling it out, having some fun with it, and then sharing some knowledge so that way, yeah, we're going to have a laugh or two, or maybe even our jaw's going to drop, because I'm sure we all have some stories to tell. But I think at the end of the day, my main goal is to educate you. And so I want to make sure that you have sound information, sound knowledge. We'll poke a little fun here and there. We'll bring some levity to the conversation. But at the end of the day, you know, I want to blanch those that, you know, what's the term blanch, right? We scald them in hot water, right? And then we cool them off in cold water. And that's my intention, because honestly, at the end of the day, there's enough room for all of us, whether you're a recipe creator, whether you're a cookbook author, whether you are a homesteader who has your own platform and a bunch of followers. At the end of the day, there's room for all of us. And we have to find a way to come together, because if there's one thing we can come together on, it's food. And yeah, okay, so we may not all see things through the same lens, but that's okay too. And so my goal isn't to alienate anyone. Yeah, we're going to have some fun. And if you say something really stupid, we might just laugh at you, because at the end of the day, there's no other way to get through this crazy world than to have a little bit of laughter and some levity. And my goal is to maybe even get you to laugh at yourself, you know, have some humble moments and realize that, you know, maybe you didn't look at things so optimistically, or maybe you were a little too stringent or closed-minded, or maybe you didn't look into the science like you thought you did. And so I'm hoping that with Blanched and some of the episodes that I'll be airing, we use it as a way to get a good laugh, but then also find it as a means to bring us back together, educate ourselves, empower ourselves, and just keep on canning and preserving, because that's what this is all about, ladies and gentlemen. It truly is. Well, thank you so much for tuning in. You have a blessed week. And until next time, happy canning.
Thank you for listening. Be sure to tune in next week for another episode of Canning with the Diva. For tips, recipes, and techniques, please visit us online at canningdiva.com.